Let's begin.
This is the Boss.
I'm the Boss.
And the Gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Here are your hosts, David Gao and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket.
Welcome in. It is the Boss and the Gloss. I'm David Gao, and I'm sitting next to the Monday Night Delight, Carla Dawson. Carla, great to be here.
It's feeling a little drafty in here tonight.
There's a lot of draft going on.
It's the week.
She's got
that was
a go-
bad.
Oh,
thank
I
you.
Got Jose going right at the start. That was my goal.
That was a very bad punch.
But I got you to react, didn't I?
Sure.
¿Y cómo estás tú, Jose?
Bien, ¿y usted?
Ah, yo bien, como siempre. You know, this is an interesting night because, of course, well, on Thursday, we'll be in Nashville for the NFL draft. You're working on your mock draft. Always interesting to see whom you've got going where. Then we've got the NBA tourney effect. There, you've got another bracket for the NBA playoff, which is great. And then we've got the NCAA tourney, which, of course, is long behind us, but we remember the high.
The ashes left behind
and
from my bracket.
The low of your NCAA bracket. Oh,
did we need to bring that up?
So when we look at the three, the NBA mock draft or the NFL mock draft, the NBA playoff tourney, and the NCAA, which will fare better for the Gloss? On which do you feel the most confidence?
I feel the most confidence with the NBA playoff bracket.
You do.
It's smaller chance
okay,
for error, too.
That's a little.
No, but I do think.
And you're on top of this NBA or the NFL mock draft, though. You've got several mocks. You've got it pretty well figured out who's going to go where now.
Mocktails. That's what that is.
Mocktail.
I've got mocktails going on over here.
Are you drinking a mocktail tonight?
I might need to. Well,
Jose,
how is yours?
She's on a roll tonight. I mean,
oh my gosh, I've never gotten two reactions from Jose in the same segment.
Two in the first segment.
And it's a short one, too.
Well, no, yes. Don't give her any more mocktails.
So this is what you did with your week off last week? Just wrote down
puns? I saved them up for this week for you, Jose.
Well, among these topics, when we return, we're going to take
I wanted y'all to really miss me.
Well, we really did.
Okay, good.
But we're going to take a look at the NBA, and we'll take a look at your tourney in the NBA, and we'll also take a close look at this upcoming Rockets-Warriors series. A lot of people already looking
at you. You're
ahead.
Jinxing it. I don't like
no,
it.
No, I think it's in the air. When we return on the Boss and the Gloss, SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, in the Western Conference, we've been envisioning for some time it would come down to the Rockets and the Warriors. What we didn't envision is that it would likely take place in the Western Conference semifinals. And first, I live with the premise that that's a good thing for the Rockets because the Rockets are a team who have been very injury prone. Obviously, we'll all think of Chris Paul and the Rockets one hamstring away from perhaps dethroning the Warriors last year. They get to face them earlier, and the Rockets are going to be healthy. That's an exciting matchup. Now, I don't want to look ahead, but the Rockets are
but
leading.
You are.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're 3-0, and so is Klay Thompson, right?
Right.
I mean, he's
yes,
already,
I know.
He basically said he's looking forward to that next team who's up 3-0.
That dip in the ocean made him pretty open with his speech there.
So here comes the big series. I will say this about the Rockets. What's been most striking to me, well, at least in that game three against Utah, was the way they were able to win when Harden was stone cold, when he just wasn't making
for 15.
Anything. 0 for 15. I mean, I can't.
Not even layups.
That doesn't happen to James Harden.
Floaters, yeah. No, it was crazy.
And one of the fun things you saw, he said that, well, during the course of the game, the Jazz, who were having their way with the Rockets because Harden was not shooting well, and they were giving him a lot of trash talk. And you can imagine what they might say to a guy who was 0 for 15. They were having their way with him verbally. Is that when he looked up at the scoreboard and he hadn't made a basket entering the fourth quarter, and the Rockets were only down by two, he said, I know, only down by two, and I haven't even begun to fight. He knew the Rockets were going to take that 3-0 lead.
And, you know, this is what's so impressive about the Rockets, is they've got their MVP caliber player who may well be the league MVP, couldn't do anything.
Yep.
But they're deep. They had Kenneth Faried stepping up big time in that game. They have really have a deep roster. Gerald Green was hitting key threes. You know, CP3 is going to do what CP3 does. But if he has an off night, there's enough people to cover for that. You've got EG knocking down shots and Eric Gordon. I mean, they've really just got such a deep and complete roster.
And a roster constructed to play the Warriors. I mean, Daryl Morey has been explicit. He knew the mountain he needed to climb, and it looks like he's going to get him in round two. Golden State with the lead over the Clippers, 3-1. I mean, obviously the one game the Clippers were able to take was that incredible come-from-behind win.
31-point, erased a 31-point deficit. What in the world?
Ridiculous comeback.
Now, look, that was the game they lost Boogie Cousins.
That's right.
I'm not going to blame it on that, but that was a factor, right. Clearly.
Okay, so what kind of factor is that going forward? I mean, Cousins, done for the season, will not be able to play against the Rockets. Do you think the Warriors will miss him against Cousins when they have to face the Rockets?
I think there's two factors to the Boogie Cousins injury. I think assuming that the Warriors and the Rockets are going to meet in this next round, it actually benefits the Warriors. Boogie Cousins does not defend the pick and roll well,
yep.
And it's been exposed. I was there at the game in Golden State when, oh my gosh, it was terrible. So it actually helps their system to not have him in a matchup with the Rockets. Also, long term, like it was just kind of assumed, I think, that Boogie Cousins is not going to be coming back to Golden State because they can only offer him 20% over the $5 million that they're giving him now. So roughly $6.2 million next year if they were to keep him.
And that's certainly not the reason he came to Golden State.
No,
he came to Golden State to have a prove-it year and then sign a big deal somewhere else.
Exactly. So at this point, he's not getting a big deal anyplace else because he's an injury risk.
Right.
You know, first it was the Achilles, and I feel bad for him. These are rough injuries to get over. But it may bode well for the Warriors that they're going to get to keep him because, and interestingly enough, before people are saying, yeah, another super team they're building, nobody wanted DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, he was out there as a free agent. And so when all 32 teams passed on him, he then picked up the phone and called the Warriors and said, okay, hey, I'll do league minimum or $5 million, whatever I'm going to play for. And they were like, sure, yeah, come. So everybody else had a chance. And so I think that the injury, I think it benefits the Warriors in the matchup with the Rockets, and it also extends the chance that the Warriors will be able to keep him in the offseason.
No, those are two big impacts from that injury, no doubt. Looking ahead, though, Warriors, they don't need Cousins to combat the Rockets. I mean, it's not as much
they don't need
fit.
Bogut either right. to combat
so,
the Rockets.
But it will be a great series. I mean, when you go back a year ago and you think about how tight it was last year, there's every reason to believe it's going to be equally as tight this year.
Although you look at the regular season and the Rockets are 3-1 against the Warriors. The Warriors only won one game and they were blowouts. I mean, they weren't even close. So it looks to me, but actually you can't really totally do that because the regular season Warriors and the playoff Warriors are not the same.
Right.
And I think that's where they may have an edge. I think the Rockets have an edge in talent and depth. Well, maybe not talent, depth. I'm going to say that. They have a deep bench and an experienced bench in bringing in players like Gerald Green and Faried and Austin Rivers, and who's having a resurgence. But the experience in the playoffs, it's a different animal. And I think that, yes, it was Chris Paul's hamstring injury was a big factor. But what people don't remember with Golden State, Andre Iguodala, while he is a bench player, he is key. He is a ball distributor. He makes things happen. He is the catalyst in the Warriors' offense when Draymond's on the bench. So they lost him for the entire Rockets series as well. So it's not Chris Paul, but it's a similar type of situation. The other thing is that the Rockets went cold. You remember they missed 27 consecutive three-pointers in Game 7 when they had the lead, like a nice 15-point lead on the Warriors. And that, to me, is a tightness from, oh, my gosh, they're starting to gain on us. They're starting to gain on us. And just not able to, not having that playoff experience as a group where the Warriors do have that. And they have had their backs up against the wall. And they've learned how to lose in the postseason as well as learned how to win. It's interesting.
Well, the Rockets have learned to lose in the postseason. Last year, obviously, one of the Mm-hmm. Most disheartening
True.
Losses.
There we go.
They're going to have to get over that hump. They're going to have some great execution in the fourth quarter. James Harden has not been a great playoff performer historically, but he's had a great regular season, and he is, when he's on, he is
unstoppable,
a heck of a
force,
and as you noted, maybe the league MVP this year. Mm-hmm. Now, in the Eastern Conference, let's just take a look over there. I mean, it is amazing to me. Of course, we're talking as if all these round one series are all over, and they're not. But
there's only one series that is over.
Right. I mean, Boston has defeated Indiana. They've gotten the sweep. But as we look across the playoffs, it feels like we've gotten some definition here. Boston likely to face Milwaukee, who's leading Detroit 3-0. I think that Boston-Milwaukee matchup is going to be a great one.
Oh, I think it's going to be as exciting as Houston-Golden State.
You think those are the two class acts of the Eastern?
Because, I do.
I mean, I give Philadelphia and Toronto a lot of respect. They've had great regular seasons, or at least Toronto has. And I feel some sympathy for that series. But Boston-Milwaukee is the creme of the Eastern Conference now, because Boston has become the team everybody thought they would, at least in one series against Indiana. They have played as a team, they played as a unit, and they've gotten contributions from guys like Gordon Hayward, who has struggled to get his game to a top level.
And, you know, he's came back from a devastating injury.
Yep.
And maybe it has taken him this 70 games or whatever it is to get to where he is. Interesting stat for Boston. When Gordon Hayward scores 20-plus points off the bench, they win. Watch that number. That'll be key for Boston in the series. And then you've got Kyrie, who is a playoff. I mean, he can do it with his eyes closed. He's done it so many times, and he's come up big so many times.
Well, he's come from the Cavaliers, which was a team that, look, over the last few years, when Kyrie and LeBron were together, it was clearly a case where they didn't have to pay too much attention to the regular season. It was all about the postseason. So maybe that's a little bit of Kyrie's DNA, and he does turn it on in the playoffs. He's mm-hmm. been historically a very good playoff performer.
Yes.
But then the other great thing for the Celtics is they're getting contributions from Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, the back-to-back lottery picks they got in the draft. And I'll tell you what, when Jaylen Brown is able to hit the threes the way he has, he is an explosive player, because his athleticism is off the chart. No one's ever questioned that. Sometimes he questions his shooting ability, but when he's nailing the threes, then he's able to also drive off of that, and he is an offensive force. And that team, when you think about Kyrie and Tatum and Brown and Gordon Hayward and Al Horford, not to be lost, he's the glue of that team. They have really come together, and if they play together and they play as they have and did against Indiana, they may well be the ones that come out of the East.
And they're a very well-coached team. And it's interesting, a devastating injury like Marcus Smart looks like it's benefited players like Jaylen Brown.
It's given Jaylen Brown some time. There is a rotation. Everybody understands it here in the playoffs. When you talk about the coaching, Brad Stevens, now he gets essentially a week to prepare for the Bucks and to prepare how to defend the Greek Freak. So I think the Celtics are really well positioned to make a run. They've got to get by Milwaukee, which will be tough. And then, of course, the winner of Philadelphia and Toronto is no slouch. But right now, with the Celtics as they are, they would be my favorite in the East.
I think what's interesting about that matchup, Milwaukee has been incredibly consistent from game one until now, and Boston has been all over the map. However, if they're peaking at the right time, I mean, this is the time to peak. Start getting your stuff together in round one, and you're going to be in nice shape. So it'll be an interesting matchup. Who do you like out of Toronto, Philadelphia?
Well, I'm sympathetic to Philadelphia. I think when, assuming Joel Embiid is 100% healthy,
which is an if. That's
yes,
a question
there's
mark.
A lot of talent on that team. Ben Simmons showed us something. Called out for being somewhat of an average player in the half court, he really stepped up. And I love Embiid's game down low. I think that Philadelphia's got more total horses. No disrespect to Kawhi Leonard, but I think it's Philadelphia.
Toronto's young, though. They're going to have to develop some of those players.
Right.
But, yeah.
So, I see... Well, Boston getting by Milwaukee, Boston facing Philly, and then Boston getting to the finals and then playing the winner of Houston and Golden State. And actually, for the NBA's sake, I think it'd be much better if it were the Rockets again. It'd be a remake of those 80s series with the Rockets and the Celtics in the championship. Who could forget those days?
I know. Wasn't even born, but, you know, yeah, I've heard
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you're too young to remember all
That's
that.
That's exactly right now.
All right, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we will have a visit from Charles Amenihu. He is a defensive end from the University of Texas who is in the midst of the draft process. He's slated to go probably in the fourth round of the draft, and we'll get to ask him all about the draft process. We'll ask him about his career at Texas and what it was like to chase down Kyler Murray during his games in the OU
and Baker Mayfield
UT rivalry. It'll be Charles Omenihu when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Okay, we are not going to be joined by Charles Omenihu. He is a defensive end from Texas, slotted to go in about the fourth round. But one of the questions I wanted to ask him was what it was like to chase down Kyler Murray, as, of course, those Longhorns always play the Sooners. And he probably has an interesting perspective. He would have been chasing down Baker Mayfield 1 year, Kyler Murray the next year. Kyler Murray today is still at the top of everyone's mock draft. I note as I look at what I call the Bible of the draft, I see Carla Dawson's mock draft. You've got Kyler Murray still going number one. However, Pete Prisco has come out of the blue. He's a CBS sports analyst, and he says, not so fast that everybody who says it's a slam dunk that Kyler Murray is going number one, that may not be true. The Cardinals are looking at Nick Bosa. Do you believe that? On the one hand, when Pete Prisco writes that
clickbait,
I don't know, if he believes it, but it sure creates a lot of clicks. I mean, you put that headline out there, think of the clickbait. I mean, he has gotten hundreds of thousands of people clicking to say, can that really be
and
right?
And we're talking about him.
And we're now talking about him. Look at all the publicity.
I mean, he's respected, and he's very good at what he does, yes. But
he
it's
he's not just
it's an out there
fly by night. It's
right.
Not like Jose went out there and put
it's
it
provocative.
Out there.
It's pretty provocative. At this point.
At this point. So do you think there's any possibility that the Cardinals are not taking Kyler Murray number one?
No.
Yeah. They're going to go through with this. Right? And the biggest tell to me would be I wouldn't put Josh Rosen through all this sort of difficult window of time and
mental
all
stress.
The banter. I mean, a lot of people looking at, it looks like the Cardinals are in love with Kyler Murray and they're going to ditch Josh Rosen. Well, if you're really wedded to Josh Rosen, you're not going to tease the world with Kyler Murray indefinitely. And the only argument for that would be, well, if they really, really show a lot of love for Kyler Murray, that somebody will trade up and give them more to trade up. But boy, you're putting your quarterback, Josh Rosen, through a lot. And actually, the way you position him in front of his teammates is almost with disrespect. I just don't think you can do that to the guy, Josh Rosen, if he really is still your number one quarterback.
No, duly noted. But do you think, when do you do? So let's say you are Arizona and you don't want this to be known for sure because now the speculation's out there, a la Peter, you know, on this trade and you've got people, maybe he's got people below him talking about moving up, this and that, whatever it is. So when do you trade Josh Rosen? Because if you wait till after the draft begins, then doesn't Rosen's stock drop a little more? You don't get as much for him as you would want. But if you give that away, if you trade him before it starts, everyone knows who's going number one and when.
Right.
So you can position yourself better.
So I've been thinking about this, and I do believe they're going to take Kyler Murray. They're going to trade Josh Rosen. The question, of course, you've asked is, when will they trade Josh Rosen? I think that most teams are looking at Josh Rosen as if he were in this draft now. They're stack ranking him against the quarterback.
I feel
for this
that
draft.
Too.
So you can
like
say,
he's
if you're
redrafted.
Putting up your board together and you need a quarterback, okay, everybody's consensus seems to be Kyler Murray number one. There's Dwayne Haskins, there's Daniel Jones, there's Drew Locke, there's Josh Rosen. Probably not in that order.
There's also Will Greer, who's starting to be talked about.
There are other names out there.
You know how this always happens.
Always the quarterbacks tend to sneak up as the process gets closer and closer and closer. The quarterbacks get more and more valuable. There's more of a gleam in their eye. But I'll tell you that I think Josh Rosen is somewhere in most people's rankings between, probably in the third or fourth, maybe the fifth. Maybe he's after the big four of this draft. And so when you ask, when will the trade happen, if I were a team like the Redskins or our team
who badly need a quarterback,
I might wait and see And because I might like Dwayne Haskins as my number two quarterback on my board, I'm not going to give up my pick for Josh Rosen if I can get Dwayne Haskins. So it'd be helpful to these teams to wait and see how the quarterbacks unfold. My view, my mock has four quarterbacks going in probably the top 20 picks. And so somewhere in that midst, Josh Rosen will then come to play. Somebody might like Josh Rosen better than they like Daniel Jones, and so they will.
Well, I think that's pretty.
Figure out a way to get him.
So you're saying the trade will probably happen after the draft has started.
Yes, it'll happen in the midst of the draft as the quarterback picks are taking place.
Yeah, as it starts to sift out. You know, it's interesting too. Is I think fit is going to be really key with Josh Rosen.
Yep.
And when I mean fit, I don't mean athletically necessarily, because honestly, he's got a lot of super raw talent. I mean, really great talent, but it hasn't translated to winning at the collegiate level, and clearly not at the NFL level. You know, I give him a bit of a hall pass because he was in Arizona, which was a mess. But you look that the two coaches he's played for, Jim Mora at UCLA and Steve Wilks at Arizona, fired. Ooh, that is not a good track record.
He's not a coach wrecker, is he?
I mean, I hope not. But, you know, that is something to look at. I mean, that's just two situations. But I look at someone like the New York Giants. Clearly, they're in need of a quarterback if this is truly Eli's last year. So you've got manager Dave Gettleman, who's pretty brash personality. He does what he needs to do. I cannot see he and Josh Rosen meshing well together.
Well, there were
Josh
reports
Rosen
that came out that were concerned
brash.
About his demeanor, right? They were concerned about Josh Rosen's demeanor.
So that I think that's... That's interesting. They have two picks, 6 and 17.
Right.
And I don't think, do you think they're in the Josh Rosen business?
No, I have had more trouble figuring out what Dave Gettleman is going to do with that giant draft.
Welcome to the small group of like millions of us.
Well,
I think
because
that's true.
I might think that they would take the second best quarterback in this draft, whomever you
at
like.
At number six.
At number six. Because they need to draft a quarterback. I thought they should have drafted a quarterback last year. They took Saquon Barkley. And it's hard to argue against the Saquon Barkley pick. However, they still don't have a quarterback, and here they sit. And frankly, by the time the quarterback they draft is developed, Saquon will have now been through 3 or 4 years and on a clock that is usually a 7-year running back career for someone like him. I just don't know that it was the right sequence to take Barkley last year and find a quarterback this year. But we could debate that.
And they may not get a quarterback because they're also in desperate need of a pass rusher, and there are outstanding ones in this draft. What I'm thinking about as you were talking about Saquon Barkley, obviously they have the 17th pick thanks to trading Odell Beckham to Cleveland.
Yep.
When Gettleman was asked about the OBJ trade, you know, because it's kind of crazy if you're a Giants fan, he said it's not just about talent. I mean, there's culture is a huge issue. And let's just say we don't have a culture problem anymore without saying OBJ, which would explain exactly why someone like a Josh Rosen would not be a good fit if Dave Gettleman thinks that OBJ has a lot of antics and is a cancer in that locker room. Josh Rosen isn't going to help that at all.
So I'm on a limb to say this, but this is one time I sort of agree with Dave Gettleman. I think that OBJ was a bit of a cancer in that locker room.
Oh, I totally agree.
And this is my one question for why the Browns went out of their way to get a guy with a big contract. You gave up a lot of draft capital and salary cap space. And I don't know if OBJ is going to be happy getting the catches that he has to share with a Jarvis Landry, working with a quarterback who's only in his second year. I actually wouldn't have made that trade. I'm actually going to say on this front that I put the Antonio Brown deal to the Raiders in the similar type risk. These prima donna diva wide receivers bug me, and they make me very anxious. And I, as a fan...
That goes with the position,
it
unfortunately.
Does,
it is part of it.
I'm going to go back to, at least for the Cowboys, they've got Amari Cooper, who seems to be head down, willing to go to work. There are those guys out there, James Thielen. There's some guys.
There are some guys.
All right, but when we come back, we'll take a look at what the Raiders will do. They've got three number ones in the three big picks coming up. The Raiders, when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss, on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Now, joining us on the Progressive Insurance Guest Line, we have Charles Amenahu from the University of Texas, standout defensive end. Charles, welcome into the show. You're on with David and Carla.
What up, man? What up?
All is good here, and we're excited for this big week. Are you ready for Thursday?
Yeah, man. I'm super excited. I'm ready for this, to see where I go.
This is Charles Amenahu. He is a standout defensive end from the University of Texas. Before we get to the draft and look ahead, I want to look back for just a minute. You were recruited by Charlie Strong. You played under Tom Herman. What was that transition like? How do you compare those two coaches?
It was different a little bit, but how I kind of took it is this is business. When things aren't going right, people feel like they got to make a change, and see, I mean, that's what they did. And the difference is, I think, is like I would say maybe Coach Strong was more interactive with us. As for Coach Herman, there was a lot more business-like.
Well, let me ask you this. The Tom Herman, when he came in, he had almost a message to Longhorn players that no one should feel entitled. No one should feel they had arrived anywhere. And yet I've always been struck that the University of Texas almost ad hoc slogan is, we're back, as if we're back means we've gotten somewhere. And contrast that to Alabama, which is we're in a process, we're always growing. Where is the Texas program? Is it back? Is it a work in progress? How do you define where they are right now? I mean, season ended pretty well and looks pretty good in the Big 12 with Ellinger coming back. Where do you see the Texas program today?
Work in progress. Back would mean national champions, and that wasn't what was achieved. So I think a work in progress is the biggest thing.
Okay, Charles, time to brag on you. So in your career at Texas, 115 tackles, 16 and a half sacks. What's noticeable about that number, which I think is great, 9.5 sacks your senior year. So you're definitely rising at the right time. I looked, and I know I'm going to give you 5 teams that seem like great landing spots that would be lucky to get you, and I want to see who you would prefer to play for, and that would be Cleveland, Indianapolis, Tennessee, Tampa Bay, and San Francisco. Who's going to be the lucky one? Who do you want to play for? If you got your choice. Of course, you'd take anyone, I know, but.
I really don't have a preference, to be honest with you. All 5 organizations are, you know what I'm saying, very prestigious and have great history. And Cleveland is coming up with the talent they have. And so really anywhere would be fantastic for me. Hopefully they all have, I think, early picks in the second round, maybe in the first or whatever. That would be the best thing if they like me enough to pick me early. So,
and you had a fantastic Senior Bowl. Really did a lot. Really impressed these guys. So we're excited for you, Charles.
Thank you. Thank you. I tried to make sure I put my best foot forward at the Senior Bowl, and I knew that was a place where everybody was going to be there, and I think that's what I did.
We're talking to Charles Amenahu, standout defensive end from Texas, entering the draft this Thursday. So as you've gone through this process and NFL teams are evaluating whom they're going to pick, tell us about some of the strange questions you've been asked. Are there any things that stand out to you, any meetings that stood out to you, people you talked to that were different, that surprised you along the way?
No, there's nothing strange. I think everybody kind of on the same kind of format, to be honest. I never had a strange or weird question. It was smooth for me.
Okay, so you played against Kyler Murray, obviously in the great rivalry, the Red River rivalry. I guess you would have played against both Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. Does it surprise you that Kyler Murray is likely to be the number one pick overall? Did you see him as that kind of talent?
I mean, it surprises me at first, but when you look at the situation and who the head coach is for the Cardinals, it doesn't. I know Coach Kingsbury and him have had a really good relationship. I think when he I don't think Coach Kingsbury was at A&M when Kyler was at Allen, but I know they have a really good relationship. So, it doesn't surprise me with that situation. Overall, he's a really good talent, number one overall. It could be debatable, but with the situation at hand, no, it's not surprising.
Okay, I've got a fun question for you, Charles. So, which quarterback in the NFL are you most looking forward to sacking, and which running back are you looking forward to bringing down in the backfield?
Running back would be Saquon Barkley.
I knew it. Good answer.
How do you know it was going to be Saquon?
Because he's the toughest one to bring down, and you can do it.
Thank you. Quarterback probably be, man, that's a good one. Either Lamar Jackson or Tom Brady.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, those would be good names.
And two totally different styles, too. One's going to keep you on the run, and one's going to stand there in the pocket waiting for you.
Exactly.
Do you have a favorite NFL team growing up?
I did. The Cowboys were, but then I kind of grew out of that as I got older.
You grew out of it. You've matured and figured out deeper truths. I'm still a lingering Cowboys fan. I have not yet matured. But
we're working on them over here, Charles. We're really working hard.
She's trying to fix me.
So in today's NFL game, Charles, who do you want to mold your game after? Like, who do you look up to and think, I'd like to, he's kind of my mentor. Who would I want to play most like?
I don't think I have anybody I want to play most like. I think I have guys I watch and kind of like take bits and pieces. I want to be me. That's what's gotten me this far. I want to be the best version of me. I don't want to be anybody else. But it's guys I've certainly taken pieces of their game and try to emulate mine.
We're talking to Charles Omenihu, the standout defensive end from Texas. So in your ideal, would you be playing as a defensive end in a 3-4 or do you like a 4-3? Does it make much difference to you what scheme you play in? Is there any chance you'd be an outside linebacker in a 3-4?
For most teams, I think it's either me being a 3-4 defensive end or 4-3 defensive end. I think I can fit and ball in either one. Obviously, I'm used to playing on the edge as a 4-3 defensive end, but anywhere a team needs me to make an impact, that's what I'll do.
Is the bow coming with you to the NFL?
The bow, yes, it will.
I like that. Yeah.
You like it?
I do. It's nice. Yeah, I think you need to bring that one with you. You could be a trendsetter there, Charles.
I think I will.
When you look at the very top defensive players in this draft, I mean, Nick Bosa is probably rated number one by most people. How do you compare him? What makes him so exceptional? How do you compare him to yourself?
I think I'm bigger than him, longer than him. I think he's really good with his hands. I think I'm pretty good with my hands as well. I think that there's other factors in this draft and kind of how this stuff works that I guess would separate guys, quote unquote, that is out of my control. But I mean, he's a good player and well deserving of everything that he's going to achieve and have.
At Charles Omenihu from the University of Texas. Charles, big day Thursday. Where will you be when the draft takes place?
I'll be at home with my family and friends and watching and waiting for my name to be called.
Very exciting day. We wish you all the best of luck on Thursday. I hope it's a great day for you and very excited to see where you land on Thursday. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Well, what an exciting time, right? You're an NFL draft prospect. You've just finished your great collegiate career, and you're going to sit home with your family and wait for your name to be called.
I mean, super exciting. He is a workhorse, and it's really neat to see how his career has just improved. I mean, up into the senior game and then some. That's what you want to see when you're an NFL scout.
So looking at Lance Zierlein, NFL.com's draft analyst, he said that he thought Charles would probably land somewhere around the fourth round. So that's where he would fit. He actually thinks Charles has all the physical tools, but needs a little bit more development. And if he gets good coaching at the NFL level, he could have a really good career.
He's got great size, 6'6", 275.
Yeah.
And, you know, pass rushers are in – they're in need. So he may go before the fourth round. I sure hope so. I really like him.
All right. Well, there are some exciting pass rushers coming in this draft. We were talking about the top of the draft. Nick Bosa, of course, is seemingly everybody's favorite guy mm-hmm. at the top of the mm-hmm. draft. So Kyler Murray, number one. Nick Bosa likely to go number two to the 49ers. Number three, the Jets. Everybody says, oh, they want to trade down, and maybe they do. But if they stay there, Josh Allen, Quinnen Williams.
Ed Oliver is getting talk at number three.
And Ed Oliver out of the University of Houston. It's really interesting. There was a little window maybe at the beginning of the college football season when he was considered potentially the number one pick overall.
And a Heisman candidate.
Fell back a little bit.
Knee injury. And Major Applewhite. And no offense.
Some crises off the field.
Using him as a nose tackle only. Eek. Well, don't get me started. Uh-huh.
But now he really is working his way back into the conversation maybe as a top 5 to 7 pick.
He had a rock star pro day. He's just, he's a physical specimen. He is, he's small for the position, but he is very, very fast. He's explosive. He can get in the backfield in a nanosecond. I mean, you got to see this guy move. It's amazing.
Well, and some people compare him to Aaron Donald, which is a great compliment. Certainly at this moment in time, everyone's looking for the next Aaron Donald. He would be a great one to add to any defensive front.
And he's got this nasty streak. I like that for the Raiders.
Okay, well, so the Raiders with the number four pick overall, they've got three picks in the first round. A great opportunity to reshape that team, a great opportunity for Gruden to shape it in his image. As everybody noted, they've now kicked the scouts out of the room. Mike Maycock and John Gruden have said, no scouts, we're going to do this on our own now. And the Raiders have three first-round picks, almost certainly with the fourth pick. I mean, unless they do the crazy thing and go get a quarterback.
Oh, please don't do that.
I mean, it would seem Derek
They've got
Carr,
a quarterback.
They've got a quarterback in Derek Carr. And so let's assume they don't do that. They're going to get some great defensive help. Maybe it's Ed Oliver with the number four pick overall. Maybe it's a Quinnen Williams. Who do you like for the Raiders at number four?
I really like Ed Oliver at number four.
Yeah.
I really do. I've loved his college career. You know, he finished with 193 tackles, 54 tackles for loss, 13 and a half sacks, and 6 forced fumbles. 3-time All-American. And, you know, his senior year wasn't his best. He did have some injury issues with the knee. Major Applewhite and him, they weren't the best coaches. But he's an outstanding one-gap guy. Now, he has to develop a bit more as a pass rusher, but because he's still a little bit raw with usage in his hand usage. He's super versatile. Super versatile. And he's violent with a high motor. That's exactly what this defense needs with the Raiders.
You like that combination?
I love it. I love a little nasty. I love a little violence. I love a high motor.
That's actually Jeffrey Simmons you just described.
Well, that's probably true.
Different matter.
Although, you know, he tore his ACL after the combine.
Right.
So preparing for the combine.
Simmons, of course, with two hickeys on him, right? One is he's torn his ACL. He will not be able to contribute early in the year, at least. And then, of course, there is that video where he was beating up a woman back in high school. And both those things will come into play. Simmons, a top 10 talent physically, but mm-hmm. almost certain to drop with those two issues. I mean, the other one, for a very different reason, Montez Sweat, a standout defensive end from Mississippi State, extraordinary athlete. His physical dimensions are off the charts, but he's been diagnosed with a heart condition. Some teams have taken them off the board altogether, that he will not be drafted. Some mocks still have him as a top 10 pick. So he's a big swing and comparable to Maurice Hurst in one dimension. Mm-hmm. Last year, of course, Maurice Hurst
went to Oakland.
Yeah, projected first-round pick, had the heart condition, and slipped to the third round. Raiders took him. So if somebody's willing to take a bet on a guy with a heart condition, Montez Sweat is a heck of an athlete, and probably you'll get a lot of value for him. You'll be able to get him a little later because you like it to slip with his heart condition.
And he's another one, too. He's really, really fast, very similar to Oliver, and just needs to refine his pass rush as well. But he's got the versatility, and he's got a great first step, so he can get an edge in that run game.
All right, when we come back, we're going to ask the Gloss how many quarterbacks will be taken in the first round when we return on SB Nation Radio.